Welcome to the Dental Breakdown Show with Christian White. Mr. White is the CEO of White & Associates Practice Consulting. Better business, better dentistry. This podcast strives to help break down the current and everyday issues within the dental industry. In each podcast, we discuss a topic on dentistry with respected industry professionals, dentists, and other relevant special guests. Our goal is to help provide you valuable insights for your dental practice. We thank you for listening today. From the dental chair to the beach chair, wherever you are listening, sit back, relax, and enjoy the Dental Breakdown Show. Now take it away, Christian.
Let's welcome our guest to the podcast today, Brian Nimchuk. Thank you for being a guest on the Dental Breakdown Show today.
Thank you for having me, Christian.
Well, Brian, thank you for taking time out of your productive schedule to be here today. You have got a lot of great information to share today, so let's get right to it. Why don't you do something first? Why don't you maybe just real quick give a short bio about yourself and tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm an attorney for the law firm of Helmuth & Johnson, headquartered in Edina, Minnesota, but with a brand new office as well in Woodbury. We are a general practice firm with 60 plus lawyers. We practice in basically every area of law that you might possibly need, ranging from real estate to corporate to commercial to litigation, estate planning, and of course, employment law, which is what brings me on your show today. I personally do a lot of employment law counseling of employers and employment law litigation for employers usually, but sometimes employees, on a wide variety of legal topics. But for employers like most of the folks watching this podcast, I advise them on how to avoid the sorts of litigation that I handle when it has to come up. So that's my focus as an attorney, and that's what I'm here to address today in terms of a brand new draft law that's making its way through the legislature right now.
Brian, why those are some great things. Thank you for sharing that about yourself. And I think the piece of legislation that we're going to discuss today is hugely important. And I'm just going to kind of give you the floor, and I'm going to let you kind of take it away. You know, the Paid Medical Leave Act is what it's called. And why don't you go ahead and start telling our listeners kind of a little bit about it?
Sure. At the outset, I'll say this is a very important law, and you mentioned it, and I'll probably repeat it several times during our talk today, but this will fundamentally change the rights of employees in the state of Minnesota. So broadly speaking, this Paid Medical Leave Act will provide up to 24 weeks of mostly paid leave per year for almost every employee in this state. If they need to be absent from work because of a medical condition, care for a relative, or a pregnancy, birth, or adoption. So we'll get into some of the details, but broadly speaking, that's what this law does. And several important, I will call them lawyerly caveats at the beginning. What we'll be talking about today is a draft law. It's being discussed in the legislature, but it is not the law now.
Okay.
The law has not been passed yet. It's being discussed, debated, revised as we speak. I'm not a politician, but have every expectation based on what I read, see, hear, that we will see some version of this law passed before the end of this legislative session. So I expect we'll see something like this, but we are not talking about, and I will not be talking about, a law that actually exists and is in force right now. There are no cases interpreting it, no regulations issued by state agencies, no experience that I personally have in dealing with this situation in real life. But so with those caveats, there are a series of things we can take away from the draft law, which is 70 pages long. So I will be talking about the nuts and bolts, some of what I think to be the high points, and particularly the high points that are relevant to small business owners, to medium-sized business owners, as you start to think about what this will look like if and when it comes to be. So the first thing that struck me as I was hearing about this, reading about this, is how much this law is kind of a hybrid between what we already know as the FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act. It's a federal law that applies only to businesses with 50 or more employees, But that provides unpaid leave for up to 12 weeks a year. It's a hybrid of that and our state unemployment system, which is something administered by the state that employers are taxed on, and you the state ends up paying benefits to eligible people. This law is kind of a hybrid between the two. If an employee feels they are eligible for leave, and we'll get into what that looks like, they don't go to the employer to determine an employee's eligibility. They go to the state. And if the state approves their application for family, for paid medical leave, then the state, out of the funds that are created for this specific purpose, pays the benefits to the employee. The employer isn't involved as a gatekeeper in the same way that they are under the FMLA law. So it's important kind of at the outset to think about this a lot in the way you think about unemployment benefits. This is a benefit that's really analogous to that, but instead of for former employees who are laid off, it's for current employees who are otherwise eligible to receive this benefit and can certify to the state that they are eligible, not necessarily to the employer. Okay, so with that in mind, let's talk about some of the broad outline of what this law looks like. Employees are eligible for first up to 12 weeks per year of paid leave if they have a quote unquote serious medical health condition, serious health condition or a pregnancy. Serious health condition or pregnancy. Now, serious health condition has about a page or two of definitions, but I won't get into it, but it's a serious health condition, something that prevents them from working. You have a question, Christian?
Well, I was just going to say, so it's a serious health condition. So I'm sure it's like you said, they took two pages to just define that piece. You know, it's like I have a broken leg, I have something, you know, a broken arm, or I have a serious car accident, or I mean, you know, something like that. I was just going to throw that out there. That's when I think of serious injury, you know, it's something that impedes me from doing my job.
Correct. And generally speaking, in broad strokes, you would have to demonstrate to the state through the filling out of the correct forms by a doctor that you in fact have such a condition as an employee, or that you have a pregnancy that you need leave to address. Mm-hmm. So up to 12 weeks for that purpose. In addition, an employee can get up to 12 weeks per year of bonding. This is post-adoption, bonding leave, safety leave if they have if there's a domestic violence type situation. Or for family care. This is if you have a family member that has a serious health condition that you need to care for them for some period of time and take off of work to do it. Family member is broadly defined. Everyone from grandma and grandpa to aunts and uncles, nieces and nephews, things like that. If you have a family member with a serious health condition and can demonstrate to the state that that person needs your care, you can get an additional 12 weeks to care for that person of paid leave. Now, there's also the ability to, just like you would see in the FMLA context, to not have those 12 weeks be consecutive and to not have them have the employee away from the office or the workplace full time. If you say, I need Friday afternoons off to take my family member to get their to their dialysis treatments or something, mm-hmm. Then that can perhaps be 4 or 8 hours or whatever of time that you're allowed to take off and get a certain percentage of your wages to reimbursed by the state. And that counts towards the 12 weeks. So there's intermittent leave that's available if appropriate and if certified by a healthcare professional.
So I don't have to take it all at once. It's like you said, it can be, okay.
Yep, it can be taken intermittently as may be needed by the legitimate needs of the serious health condition or the family care situation. But again, the state is the gatekeeper on that. The employer's not in a position to have to adjudicate or decide whether a health condition is serious enough or whether the family member really is the uncle or not. I mean, that's not the employer's job in this whole situation. It's the state's.
Okay.
So and the state has set up a bureaucracy that, or will be setting up a bureaucracy that mirrors in many ways what we'd see in the unemployment system, to take in those claims, adjudicate them, deal with appeals, all by employees, mm-hmm. And ultimately decide whether those benefits are paid.
Mm-hmm.
I will say the benefits themselves, and these are benefits paid by the state, so it's less important to the employer, but generally speaking, low-income workers would get paid 90% of their wages, and it's graduated, and it goes down to 55% of wages for higher-income workers.
Okay.
So you get paid some, but not all, in cases of low-income workers, most of your wages for that time that you're out on paid medical leave.
The Dental Breakdown Show, sponsored by White & Associates Practice Consulting. Better business, better dentistry. They are a practice management and consulting firm for dentists and other healthcare-related businesses. Their sole purpose is to implement proven strategies through online and practice visits that result in the personal and professional success of the dentist and his or her team.
Hi, my name is Brian Nimchek with the law firm of Helmuth & Johnson, and located in both Edina and Woodbury. I'm a lawyer who specializes in helping clients to avoid litigation by counseling them on strategies for doing so in the areas of employment law, business, real estate, defamation, among others. But when litigation can't be avoided, I litigate for my clients vigorously, advocate for their interests, and get the results. For employees, there are offsets. Like, for instance, if you're injured at work and there's a workers' comp scenario where you're out of work because you broke your leg at work or something, the employee can't get both workers' comp benefits and paid medical leave. It's one or the other. So there are some offsets, or if they're on Social Security disability, various other benefits will kick in instead of paid medical leave in the appropriate cases.
Go ahead, sorry, Brian. Give it to you. Please continue.
Well, a couple more high points that I want to emphasize. Employees do need to provide employers with notice that they intend to take this leave if the circumstances are such that the leave is foreseeable. I mean, if you just break your leg one day, you obviously can't give 30 days notice of that, but you then would have to give notice as soon as practicable. That's actually the language in the law. But if you kind of know about it, you know about the need for the leave, you know it's coming up, you have a scheduled surgery or something, you have to tell the employer at least 30 days ahead of time that you intend to do this. So presumably employers can plan accordingly. I will say too that the law applies to basically every employee in the state of Minnesota who is not a federal employee. Basically everyone else. It doesn't matter how small the employer is. It doesn't matter how big the employer is. It doesn't matter if the employer is a city or the state itself. They're all subject to this law. Once they have worked for a company for 90 days.
Yeah.
You have to work there for 90 days, and then basically every employee is covered. Basically every employer is covered by this law. There have been lots of legislative discussions about doing more for small businesses or exempting very small businesses from this. But at this point, there aren't any blanket exemptions for smaller businesses. They have to comply with this exactly as the large businesses in the state would.
So, Brian, if I'm a small business owner, if I have less than five employees, I mean, this could have a real drastic effect on my business if, you know, something happens to one of my staff members or employees and they end up going on leave. I mean, I have to find somebody to replace that person. And then what does the law say in terms of the people who replace the people who are out on leave?
Sure. I'll answer that a couple ways. First, the people that are out on leave, they have to be reinstated when they're done with the leave. In the same or similar position that they were before. You can't wholesale replace them on a permanent basis. You when they're done with the leave, they must be reinstated. They can't be retaliated against for taking the leave. They can't be interfered. Their right to leave can't be interfered with by the employer on pain of fines and lawsuits and things like that. But in the, you know, yes, you're absolutely correct that a small employer would have bigger difficulties than the 3Ms or Best Buys of the world in, you know, filling that gap. If you only got five employees and yes. one of your key people is now out for 12 weeks because of, you know, the need to care for grandma or something like that.
Right.
That's fine. That's great. But you're going to have some holes to fill during that time frame. Hopefully you've been given enough notice to plan accordingly. I can say that instead of exempting small employers, what the law does is it provides what's called small business assistant grants that can be used to hire, find, retain replacement workers mm-hmm. and otherwise compensate employers, small employers specifically, for losses or problems that they encounter because of their compliance with this law. So there's a fund set up that you can apply to tap into that the state would pay out to small employers who are particularly affected by this. The idea, I mean, I'm kind of aping what some of the legislators are saying, is that, you know, lots of large employers are either covered by FMLA or otherwise provide a benefit similar to this because they can, and by mandating that every smaller employer does that, it kind of evens the playing field and perhaps stops the drain of good people from small employers to large employers because to get benefits like this. Mm-hmm. That's at least the theory. You know, it doesn't help the small employer who may be particularly affected by this in an emergency type situation, but it's at least what the theory is.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, the state does recognize the severe impacts that this might have in certain situations and has tried to, pejoratively, throw money at the problem by offering businesses the ability to tap into a fund to compensate them for those sorts of issues. But fundamentally, this is going to create an important new right for employees yeah. that employers, large and small, are going to now have to deal with. The happy part of it is that the state deals with much of the administration of this law and pays out the benefits and so forth. You know, the unhappy part is not having access to these workers when they might be needed and in circumstances where those workers might not have otherwise taken that time. You know, if they break their leg or whatever and can't work, that's fine. You know, you wouldn't have had them anyways, whether it was paid leave or not.
Mm-hmm.
But there might be scenarios if, like, you know, a distant cousin needs care and, you know, you wouldn't have otherwise taken that leave because you just wouldn't have. But now if the state's going to pay you 90% of your wage to care for your cousin for 12 weeks, maybe some employees would take advantage of that in ways they might not have otherwise.
Correct. Yes. Do you see going forward, you know, as you, you know, the way the law is written, right, the way it is right now, if this, you know, in 25, if it goes in, if it becomes law, they vote, okay. Do you see trends where you're going to see abuse of this law potential abuse by employees who are working? I mean, I can be taking care of grandma, but at the same time, maybe I could be looking for another job at the same time.
Sure. Yes, I think that's in some degree of that is inevitable, exactly the same as I've seen throughout my entire career in the unemployment system. They do have it, and included in this law are robust investigative abilities and penalties that can be assessed both criminal and civil against employees who do defraud the system. And if my experience with unemployment is any guide, they'll be relatively aggressive in pursuing employees who do that and using the powers that they have to make sure that such employees have to pay the money back that they got and are excluded from the system for some period of time. I think this law calls for a year exclusion if they're found to have defrauded the system somehow. And in the right cases, seeking criminal prosecution of people who do it like more than once. So there are mechanisms in place to try to police that, but I think it's inevitable that to some degree, you'll see and unscrupulous employees taking advantage of this in ways that were never intended. Because some of these things are tough to disprove. Do I really, you know, is my, you know, my whiplash and my back really bad enough to,
right.
It's inherent in defining what serious health condition is, or defining, you know, when a family member really needs care, or, you know, they could have easily done something else to care for them. It's inherently difficult to police. And I think there'll be some degree of, you know, fraud and abuse, as is inevitable in any government program like this. But I guess I'm reasonably, I guess, assured by my experience in the unemployment system that the state is pretty good at cracking down on those sorts of things. Yeah. And that, you know, that employees who do that are probably employees with issues in the workplace anyways. And, you know, they may not be the employees you want to work too hard to keep. But that's just that's perhaps an oversimplification. Mm-hmm. I will mention one more thing that I had on my list of high points. There is an entire process for an employer, particularly I think a large employer that already has a disability type a leave system, to opt out of the system. And by submitting to the state and having the state approve a private substitute that's at least as generous as this law. So some employers will have the ability to opt out and pay less in taxes for this program because they're administering one on their own. Mm-hmm. I expect to see large employers do that.
Yeah.
But that ability is out there. I will mention too, and I didn't say this before, I should have when I was talking about who is eligible. True independent contractors are outside of the scope of this law. If you have a true independent contractor that works for you, they don't have the benefit of this. Okay. I can say that independent contractors themselves, or self-employed folks who work for themselves, have the ability to opt into the system if they want to cover themselves for this sort of thing. If I'm an independent contractor and I want to have the ability to take paid leave, I can opt into the system by choosing to pay this tax kind of on myself. They have a similar thing in the world of unemployment. You can kind of opt in so that you are covered yourself and can access these sorts of benefits if you ever need them. But the kind of company that hires you as an independent contractor doesn't have to pay taxes on those wages for this benefit, nor that they have to grant this benefit.
The Dental Breakdown Show, sponsored by White & Associates Practice Consulting. Better business, better dentistry. They are a practice management and consulting firm for dentists and other healthcare-related businesses. Their sole purpose is to implement proven strategies through online and practice visits that result in the personal and professional success of the dentist and his or her team.
Hi, my name is Brian Nimchek with the law firm of Helmuth & Johnson, and located in both Edina and Woodbury. I'm a lawyer who specializes in helping clients to avoid litigation by counseling them on strategies for doing so in the areas of employment law, business, real estate, defamation, among others. But when litigation can't be avoided, I litigate for my clients vigorously, advocate for their interests, and get the results.
So let me ask this question real quick, Ryan. You talked a little bit about funding for this program. There's a tax. How much is it? What are the employers going to have to pay?
0.7%.
Okay.
That's the full boat tax if you don't have any kind of private plan exemption. And of that 0.7% of the wages you're paying, half of that, if you want, can be passed on to the employee. You can choose to cover all of it if you want, or you can pass along, I guess, 0.35% to the employee to, you know, as their contribution to this plan.
Mm-hmm. So this will be my last question here, Brian. So if I'm an employer and I have someone who goes out on leave for a various reason, you know, a health issue, family member has a serious problem, the state has okayed it, they said okay, yep, this is legit, and they leave. So as an employer, I lose an office manager or I lose a key person in my business, and I replace that person. I find someone, okay? So then when the person who's on leave comes back, the person who's replacing that person, do I have to keep that person as well?
Good question. The answer is no, you don't have to keep that person.
Okay.
What you can't do is decide the new person is better and not give the old person their job back.
Okay.
That's forbidden by the law. You have to reinstate them in the same or similar job that they had before. Now, just like in other areas of law, like if you would have laid them off anyways because you don't need an office manager anymore, or you had business reverses or something, that's fine. That's not illegal. But short of that, you can't not reinstate someone because they took their medical leave.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, your short-term temp employee who is replacing that person, you can keep them if you want, in addition to also reinstating the person that was on leave. But you can't choose not to reinstate the person who was on leave because you like the new person better.
Okay. All right. That's an important piece. All right. I wanted to get that clarified. Brian, this has been great information. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us today. For all of our listeners, I mean, if you want to learn more about Brian and more about the parts of law he's involved in, or Helmuth & Johnson, you know, Brian, where can our listeners go to get more information?
Sure. You can call me at 952-460-9245 or email me at bniemczyk@hjlawfirm.com.
Thank you for listening to the Dental Breakdown Show with Christian White. If you would like more information about today's topic, have a topic suggestion, or would like to be a guest, please check out the description below. Or for more videos, podcasts, and information, please visit whitedentalconsulting.com/podcasts. If you liked the podcast today, please press that like button, subscribe to our channel, and hit that notification icon to become a part of the growing Dental Breakdown Show community.